What's up? This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos, and Amigos Podcast is In the Loop, the legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and stay in the loop. Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Amigos. This is your host, Mike Fenoya. I hope you guys are doing great. Thank you for coming back for another episode. As always, we're here on the Osiris Network, home to so many amazing podcasts hosted by so many talented people. And you should go over to OsirisPod.com and check out some of the great shows. Today, I am bringing you another in our installment called the Still Chasing Interviews. These are the interviews that I did throughout the summer of 19 to prepare and develop my project Still Chasing, which I did with fellow Osiris podcast host Michael Shields. He hosts Across the Margin and Welcome to the Party, Pal. And he works on Godwe and Evan, which is great. But I talk with Paul Glace, who is the founder and developer of Fantasy Tour, which predates Twitter and predates other social media. And it was a really fun place to kind of keep the fire stoked when you weren't at a show. You could hop on the board and chat, and you could play the game, the tour tournament, and you could check your stats and trade tickets and all that, even before cash or trade. It was a really cool place. He created a community and came with responsibility, and it came with, you know, a lot of hard work and a supportive wife and brother and all that stuff. And Paul goes into it here, and we talk about it. And we also go into his beginnings as a fish fan. And before I bring it to you, here is a trailer for the podcast series Still Chasing, in case you don't know what I'm talking about. Hey, what's up? This is Mike Fenoya. I'm a stand-up comedian, producer for the TV show Impractical Jokers, and host of the podcast Amigos. I'm also helplessly addicted to the band Fish. For over half of my life, I've been freakishly obsessed with this band, the community, and the endless moments they've provided us.
Dude, they're kind of like an inspirational rock band.
Now, at 40 years old, I'm taking a look back at over two decades of obsession to find out what drives this addiction, what makes them so special, and why I happily continue to make this band a priority over family, bills, and obligations. And before you judge me, take a look at yourself. You'd skip work for a fantasy draft or lie to your grandmother for a Walking Dead marathon, so back off. My thing just happens to be live music, freaking out under the lights with 20,000 of my best friends, jumping and celebrating, criticizing, traveling, planning, and partying.
I just saw a woman looking for a kid named Nugget.
Nugget! Still Chasing is a podcast series hosted by myself and my friend, author and podcaster Michael Shields. Together, we dig through our old college trunk and share our perspective on what initially drew us in, what keeps us intrigued, and continues to stoke the fire.
Just was, as you noted, so compelling that we began to organize our lives around it.
Through personal interviews with pivotal members of the community, friends, and forefathers, we not only take a look at ourselves, but we dive into the philosophy and beauty of fanaticism.
For whatever reason, Fish and the way that they play, the way they mix up their shows, was a perfect sort of field to plant a lot of dreams in.
Still Chasing provides a first-person investigation into the mind of a fanatical fan.
It features hilarious behind-the-scenes stories about the band.
Trey pulled up to a tent and got out and opened the zipper of the tent and put his head in and said, "Festival's canceled! Go home!"
Where a love of a band takes you places you never imagined.
And I headed up there with a bunch of friends, and I got the chance to meet and befriend author, counterculture icon, Mary Prankster, Ken Kesey.
Learn why we just can't stop chasing.
I want to keep coming back because I'm feeling a pure sense of happiness and bliss and nothing can take it from me.
Still Chasing is brought to you by Osiris and is available January 15th wherever podcasts can be heard.
I'm loving all the feedback from everybody that listened. Thank you so much for listening. And if you think you know someone who might like it, share it with them. And as always, I got to do this. You know, if you're on iTunes, you should go give us a 5-star rating if you think we deserve it. At Mike Finoia, MikeFinoia on Twitter and Instagram. And at Amigos Pod, AmigosPod on Twitter and Instagram. This interview, going back and listening to it, gives me... I'm my hardest critic, and it's doing a podcast is weird because sometimes you can't sit face to face with someone. You can't, you have to do it over the phone, or you have to do it on Skype, or you have, you know, whatever it is. And it's hard because you have to, you're always hyper aware and you don't want to step on someone's words. You don't want to, you know, everybody talks with a different cadence and a different timing, and you know, when you're in person with someone, I think you adapt to that faster and you react and, you know, it just turns into an easy flowing conversation. But sometimes when you're alone and you're in a room and you're trying to talk to someone, you end up talking too much. This interview should be like journalism 101, how not to do an interview. I talk so much. I wanted to know and hear so much from Paul, and I ended up just rambling and rattling on. And I think it was because I was in Las Vegas alone in a hotel room for a week, and I wasn't seeing or talking to any other humans other than like the person at Starbucks, and just having them on the phone, like, I don't know. I think it was just an overload. I think it's important to like go work out or take a walk or, I don't know, have a conversation with somebody else before you record a podcast, because then you're, I believe in the 80-20 rule where Paul should be doing 80% of the talking, I should be doing 80% of the listening and 20% of the talking. With this one, I think I kind of went a little overboard. But these are the raw, these are just the fun, you know, raw interviews and conversations that we had leading up to it. So I would like to thank Paul very much and support Fantasy Tour and everything that Paul's doing. He's a great dude. And I hope you guys are enjoying these. So I will be bringing you a bunch of new interviews soon. I hope everybody's enjoying listening to these as much as I am enjoying bringing them to you. So hope you guys have a great week, and I will be back next week with yet another interview from the Still Chasing series. Until then, here's Paul Glace. Peace, everybody. And we're recording. So who are you, Paul?
Hi, I'm Paul Glace, a fish fan for the last 25 years. And the creator of Fantasy Tour, which is a website where you can predict which songs you think your favorite band is going to play in any given concert, score points, compete against your friends, and prove that you're the biggest fan.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't really care much about what the internet could offer, unless it was music-based. And one of my buddies was like, dude, you got to check this out. This is a blast. And I did it because we were playing that game, like in the car. We were picking songs and giving point rankings based on, is it a bust out? Is it a, you know, the, can you call the opener? Can you call the closer? Wild card in the middle. Was this a game that you guys were playing, you and your friends, before you decided to build the site?
Absolutely. I was introduced to the whole concept by Benji Eisen, who
fucking Benji, man.
Yeah,
I'm texting with him, but right before you called, I was texting with him.
That's great. Well, he was a high school friend of my now wife, who I met in college, and my wife and I went to our first fish show together in 1994 at Penn State, and it turned into something that has, you know, been a part of our relationship since then. We've been to almost every show I've attended together.
Wow.
There's been a few that she hasn't been able to come to, and I'd never hear the end of that. But but at any rate, Benji was a high school friend of my wife Jessica's, And when we graduated from Penn State, we relocated to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which was close to where she was from, but new for me. And I got to know Benji in Harrisburg. And I was at a show on the Island Tour in Providence, Rhode Island, and was attending a fishnet gathering at a bar across the street from the venue. And Benji was sort of spearheading this, you know, passing a notebook around to make your picks. And I'd never seen it before. I mean, I suppose that, you know, there'd been discussions about what did you hope to hear, but actually formalizing, writing it down, doing it as a group thing, it was kind of, as far as I can recall, that was the first time I really saw it going on like that. And you know, my group of friends that I started continue to go see shows with would do it before every show. And I just started to talk to my friends about the fact that I loved programming and I wanted to do something cool, particularly around live music on the web, which I had just discovered. And this was the perfect idea for it, because you could take something that a lot of people liked doing in their small groups and scale it up to something that everybody could do, whether they're at the show or in the lot or at home, and sort of participate in the show experience, even if you're not there. And most importantly, prove that you're the biggest fan, or that you're not.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It was a little bit humbling at times, for sure.
Sure.
So, what do you remember how the original game you played scored out? I remember when we played, it was, you know, you got like I think one point when you it, there was like I think you picked like three songs. And you got 1 point if they played one of those songs, then 2 points if you picked the opener of the set, 2 points if you picked the closer of the set. You had a 5 point bust out, and then like 5 points if you picked the encore.
Well, so the tour tournament is which is what I call the game where you pick songs that you pick for the whole tour. Believe it or not, hasn't changed since the very first time it was run, and that first time happened in fall of '99. And there are 10 picks. It's set one opener, set one wild card, set one closer. The same three picks for second set, encore, cover song, a wild card, a general wild card, an overall wild card, and a one timer. And the points are the points you receive if you get the right song in the right spot are in, you know, range, but they, you know, could be anywhere from 5 to 9 points for nailing that exact pick. But you also get a point if any song in your roster is played at all. So, you know, you picked Runaway Jim as your set one opener, but they played it in the middle of the set. You still get a point for that. And, you know, it was a shot in the dark when I set those points up in the beginning, but I have to say that it has been amazingly competitive at that with those particular points.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, generally speaking, no one has a lock on the tour until that last show is played. There's always somebody nipping at your heels if you're in first place. There's a pick called the one timer where it's worth a lot of points if you get it, if you nail it. If you pick a song they only play once during the whole tour, but if they play it a second time, you lose all those points. So it could be a devastating hit to your standings if they play that song you picked a second time during the tour. So it's been a consistent game from the get-go, and it's been run for every tour since fall '99. And that first time, I recently looked this up, that first time it was played by 350 people.
God.
But thousands of people have played it over the years.
Yeah, I've played, and it's so funny that, you know, it's interesting when you look at fantasy sports, where if I'm a Miami Dolphin fan, but I have Tom Brady as my quarterback, I have to root against my team if the Dolphins are playing the Patriots. But what's hilarious about this is we're all rooting for the same team, you know?
That's right. That's right. Good point.
Yeah. So it's always been interesting when people, you know, play fantasy sports and you're like, ah, fuck, like that's my team. I want my team to lose because I have the other, you know, this is something where it's like we're all kind of, and the bust that we all want the bust out. And we all want the, you know, the cover, and we all, it's so fun and interesting. And did it take, was programming something that you just, I mean, was that easy to build? I mean, that to me is like figuring out, like, I don't know, it's just, I feel like it would take me 10 lifetimes.
Well, I had always had an interest in programming, but I was always self-taught. And so I struggled. I pieced together what I could in the beginning, which that first time that I ran the game in 99, the way that you signed up was just to fill out the form on a web page, and then it didn't store it in a database online, and you couldn't edit your picks after you submitted them, because all it really did was send me an email with your picks in the body of the email, and then I put it into a database on my local computer and crunched the numbers there and posted the standing each morning after every show. And so it progressed from there. It was truly, as they say in the programming world, a minimum viable product that first time around, where it was the least amount I had to get done just to be able to launch it and prove that it was going to be something people were interested in. And then I was able to take it from there. Steadily, I was just doing this as a hobby on the side, and getting to it as time allowed, and was, you know, impressed with, you know, how much traction it was getting, and so it motivated me. I got to keep making this better because people love it and they're asking for these features and that feature, these and those features, and how can I make this work better?
And you have to have a wife who is into it. And you have to have, you know, come home from work and do that. I mean, holy shit. You totally need some support, you know, and love from that end for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, over the course of the last 20 years, there's been the life cycle of Fantasy Tour has been that I was able to devote a lot of attention to it in 99 in the early 2000s, and then my wife and I had our first kid in 2006, and my attention to Fantasy Tour dropped dramatically, and it was a time period when Fish wasn't playing, but it was also by that time also hosting games and set lists and stats for a lot of other bands. I was doing my best to sort of keep it afloat through those years, and then Fish thankfully came back together in 2009, and people picked right back up where they left off, and it became apparent that the site had been neglected programmatically, technologically, and innovatively to such an extent that a member of the site came to me and said, "Hey, I really love your site, but it gets really slow when Fish is playing, and it's lacking some of these really, you know, critical features. Can I help with this?" And he very generously worked with me over the course of about a year, year and a half, to redo the whole thing. And that launched in the 2010 timeframe.
Uh-huh.
And I'm very thankful to him for that. His name is Stephen Blackstone, and so, you know, at that point it was hard for me to give up sort of the reins, because I was the only one who'd ever tinkered with the code and ever had their hands on what the pages looked like and how things functioned. Stephen did a great job of really sort of keeping my vision in what he built. And I sort of let go of those reins at that point and focused my attention on making sure it remained financially viable to keep hosting this website. You know, we don't charge for use of the site, and the way that we monetize the traffic is with the advertising ads that appear on the pages, which we really strive to keep to a minimum level and
sure.
and as non-invasive as possible.
Yeah, as a user, I never found it to be intrusive. In fact, it was something enjoyable because, you know, this was pre your site, you know, sort of predates, I mean, it definitely predates social media. And I mean, maybe people were using, you know, whatever early versions of, you know, Twitter at some campus somewhere. But Fantasy Tour provided us a message board and an ability to, you know, hey, if you're into fish, you might want to check out, you know, this like website that sells lot t-shirts, or you may want to find, you know, this. And it was really a neat place to go to sort of, it was the lot on the computer.
True. And you're not the first one to talk about this notion that as a predating the popular social media platforms that we know today, Fantasy Tour was really cutting edge in the early 2000s in the way that it was able to bring all the fans together and be one place where everybody kind of knew that if you wanted to know what was going on, if you wanted to catch up with what you've missed while you were, you know, going about your daily life, you could check back in on Fantasy Tour and get up to speed pretty quickly.
You know, I have to tell you, I think that the first smartphone I ever got was I got a sales job and they gave me a BlackBerry. And I remember like them, I don't know what it was. I was kind of anti, I think I was too busy just being a human to really be excited about a lot of technology and stuff. I was just still, you know, playing softball and chasing chicks around and whatever, you know, and just trying to like look people in the eyes. And then they said, here's a phone, and you got the internet on it. And I think that probably the first site that I tried to work was Fantasy Tour. You know? I mean, they gave it to me to check emails to do sales, but I was like, oh, I wonder if I could, like, log in and hit the message board. And, like, and I totally did. And it was like, dude, your site got me through so much boring shit in my life.
Yep.
I mean,
I hear that a lot. I get that feedback a lot.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the feedback. You know, I mean, when you so you set the game up and you set it out there. I mean, was it Fishnet that basically like you utilized as, hey, if you guys want to play this game, come check it out, or was it a word of mouth, as a lot of things are in our community?
I think word of mouth is a big factor. I will tell you that probably the most significant exposure came on the day that Andy Gadiel put a link to Fantasy Fish, what was Fantasy Fish at the time, on his Fish page.
Yeah.
That was the place to, you know, I mentioned Fantasy Tour being a place to find out what's been going on since you last checked in, but really at that time period, it was Andy's page. And, you know, it, again, if you checked out of the fish world for a month and just wanted to get caught up on what the hell has been happening, you'd go to Andy's page.
Yeah, totally.
And when he gave us that link, it really blew up. It was I thank Andy to this day for that exposure.
Yeah, now, I mean, then you're kind of a little bit of like your Oz, you know, when you go to shows. I remember meeting you. I met you in Miami at New Year's Eve, the first time they did Miami. I think we were hanging out together and I was like, no shit, it's Paul. Like, that's amazing. Like it, and it was like meeting a celebrity at the time. You know what I mean?
And it was, I appreciate that.
But do you know, you must have gotten that quite a bit because our world is so weird and inbred.
I do, and I certainly appreciate it. You know, at the end of the day, I'm just another fish fan.
Yeah.
But no, I appreciate the hearing from people that enjoy the site or even have feedback. You know, in recent years, we've been, and I refer to Fantasy Tour now as we, because it's me and my brother Matthew that run it, and we've had additional people on the team over the last few years, and we put ourselves out there a little bit more than I think ever before in terms of just getting the word out about, you know, Fantasy Tour isn't just, you know, languishing with nobody at the helm, and we're really out there trying to make it better and listen to your feedback and expose it to more fans and more fan bases. And it's been a great experience for me just to be able to talk to more people that have been impacted in some way, shape, or form. I've heard countless stories of couples that have met on Fantasy Tour. Certainly the thing I hear the most from people is, you know, I've met some of my best friends on Fantasy Tour, or Fantasy Tour is a great place to just go and get recommendations on any topic. I think it was interesting too that you were talking about, you know, what are we chasing and what are people into, and it could be all these different things. Well, a lot of those hobbies or interests have bubbled up into their own little sub communities on Fantasy Tour, where you can pretty much find an ongoing thread on a number of different topics, from, as you mentioned, professional wrestling to, you know, just an ongoing thread amongst people that live in Colorado.
Yeah.
And they start a new one every time they hit that 499 post limit. And it's this ongoing conversation, and it's really cool to see it happen. It's, you know, and I absolutely love hearing those stories.
You know, this seems to be a recurring theme throughout this project that I'm working on, when I'm talking to people, and talking to myself, to be honest with you, about some of these things, where, you know, nowadays you can see on Facebook, hey, looking for recommendations. I'm going to Washington, D.C. Does anybody know where I can find a sensory deprivation tank? Or does anybody recommend a good restaurant in Boston? And then you've got on Instagram someone who's like, hey, I'm going to be live chatting, you know, this episode of The Bachelor or whatever it is. And I kind of feel like Fish, our community, and maybe other communities were doing it, and I just don't know it because I wasn't a part of them, but it's just like how people go to Bonnaroo and they're like, oh my God, Bonnaroo is like the most amazing festival. And it's like, no, yeah, Fish did it in 1996. Right. Like, we predated, you know, the Coachellas and the Bonnaroos and all of that. And Fantasy Tour predated Facebook looking for recommendations and Instagram, you know, live chatting. Because I remember sitting on Fantasy Tour during the Super Bowl and during, you know, presidential election speeches and debates and whatever else it may be. And you know, there were some very heavy moments and important things that, like, I spent, like, let me see what the community has to say. And it was all because of PT, man.
I appreciate that, and I agree. It's quite a place.
Let's, if you don't mind, let's chat about this, because you and I started. You started 94. I started 95. You know, let's think about festivals. Clifford Ball. Were you there?
I was there.
Yeah. Okay. Now, pre-cell phone, pre-GPS. We've just found it, you know,
right.
And we found our buddies, and we figured out how to live on an abandoned Air Force base that our favorite band built us. Let's put PT aside. Let's just talk to Paul, the Fish fan. What are some of your recollections about, you know, your first experience with a Fish festival? Let's say Clifford Ball.
Well, I think I was like a kid in a candy store. I just was amazed at what I was seeing around me, the sheer number of people, the way that, you know, the whole thing was being run, the amount of effort that the band and its organization had put into entertaining us beyond just the sets of music, the art installations and the and the just the attractions out in the concert field or right outside it. Those are the things that stick in my mind. It was a great time.
Yeah. I've been thinking back quite a bit about how I was 15 or 16 when I was there, and have never in a million years, I can't imagine my life without that experience. I mean, it really was a life changer in the fact that, you know, I could be around people that were just like me from other cities and from other towns, and I would end up bullshitting with someone during set break, and it's like, oh my God, you live three towns away from me in Connecticut. Like, how else would we have met? You know?
That's right.
It was really wonderful, you know? And I think it's, you know, in thinking about chasing moments and looking back on some things, like, did you remember when you had your oh shit moment with Phish? When it was that, like, wow, this band is definitely going to be a part of the rest of my life?
Well, I'd like to say that it probably happened at my first show, which of course is at this point a pretty distant memory. And I mentioned earlier it was at Penn State Rec Hall, April of 1994, and I can only think, looking back on it, that it must have been impactful because I immediately sought to see them again that next fall, and the opportunity presented itself at in Pittsburgh at the Palumbo Center, and that was a pretty unique experience for me and my girlfriend at the time, wife now, that we left Penn State. I think it was on a weeknight to go, you know, over to Pittsburgh and catch a show and come back the same night, and it was just a stellar show, and everything about this scene makes you want to keep going. It's that, you know, you loved what you just saw, but you still have those other songs you want to see, or you haven't seen this one in a while, or you haven't seen them at this venue. You haven't been to a show with this friend in a really long time, and you want to go to a show with them, you want to see them again. It's, you know, and of course we are all, you know, hoping to catch that song that we've never seen. I've been reflecting a lot about that lately. I frankly, ever since catching 11 of the 13 Baker's Dozen shows, my list of songs that I have not seen them perform got to particularly rare stuff that they haven't really played since their early parts of their career.
Right.
And and so I think the last time I checked, the one thing that's hanging out there that they do still perform and have pretty recently is Kung. I've never seen them perform Kung live. I've also never seen Iculus.
Oh my God, really? Wow.
Yeah. So 116 shows and no Kung or Iculus. But
did you catch them this summer?
I
or you still haven't?
Oh no, I haven't caught those two songs. I caught seven shows this summer, but shit. I wasn't at the one where they performed those. but you know, I've been having conversations with friends that people that I've met in the scene that started their Phish going careers at the same time I did, and our lists are different. I can't believe how different our lists are, and it speaks to how amazing it is that Phish plays such a wide repertoire and keeps some of those songs at bay for whatever reason they have to make them more rare. Two different Phish fans that started their Phish going careers at the same time can have very different lists of songs they've heard the most or songs they haven't heard. And it's pretty amazing.
It's so true. And you know, it's funny that one thing that we have uniquely, you know, we collect moments and we chase these moments. And what I have found lately, you know, because of stand-up comedy, and I started stand-up when I was 29 or 30 years old, and I'm 39 going on 40 now, and I had to dive headfirst into it and take every gig I could and travel, you know, all around the country opening for whoever and blah, blah, blah. And I work nights and weekends. And I work when people are out doing fun stuff. In other words, going to concerts. So I had to miss a bunch of stuff. And I sort of had to figure out like how to deal with it. Because, and other comics were like, dude, you're working. Like, this is amazing. Like, it's happening for you. And I'm like, yeah, but they played an alumni tonight and I wasn't there, you know? And everyone's like,
right.
What the hell are you talking about? And it's just like, you know, and all it took is like one text to that group of buddies and I'm like, fucking alumni? And they're like, yeah, man, sorry. Like, that's one I've been chasing, is like the alumni. Uh-huh. Maybe I've caught, like, I don't think I've ever caught one. And it's, all right, no, I definitely have, but I guess what's funny is that it starts to, you know, blend into this, like, I'm just chasing now. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, what am I even, I think I just enjoy the activity of wanting. And it's nice to have something that's been the longest lasting thing in my life, other than anxiety. It is the one thing that cures my anxiety. And it's weird. Right. It's a very interesting, you know, Spock's brain is one for me that, you know, I caught it in Shoreline 2000 with when Bobby came out that run, the last show of 1.0, I guess you'd call it.
Yep.
And, yep. Since then, Spock's has been something that, like, I mean, yes, I've heard it, but I always want it. And
right.
That then I wasn't in Mexico, and then they play it Alpine 3, and it's like, God damn, you know, like, and it, for a minute, you're almost like, you guys are such assholes. And it's like you get mad at the band. And I really literally am like, well, I'm going to Dick's, so I'm like, all right, maybe I'll catch it at Dick's. And my friends and I, Okipa Susie is my favorite Fish anything. And okay. Susie's just the first song I ever heard on my first tape, New Year's 93. The person who gave it to me, it was rewound right to the beginning of Susie. And that's the first song I ever heard, and it changed my life. And it's been my favorite ever since. And anytime I hear it, I get texts from my friends because I go, next Susie, I quit. Like, I'm just done with it. We always joke about, when are we going to give up? And I go, if I ever hear a Susie with the horns on New Year's Eve, it's over. And sure enough, they did Susie with the horns on, I believe it was the Petrichor year. And all my friends sent me texts, and they're like, we expect your resignation on our desk in the morning. And it's just like, no, man, I'm going to stay with it. But what do you think it is about that, like, you know, the relationship that we have with the band where, you know, we have a lot of trust and a lot of forgiveness. There's a lot of give and take between us and them. And I'd love your take on that.
Sure. I mean, well, you know, we've gotten some unique insight into that with some of the recent things that have come out from Trey between the article and the movie. I loved the quote, and I'll probably butcher it, but the quote from the New York Times article about how he feels like, you know, each time we come out to see them, he owes us more.
Yeah.
And that mentality, I think, kind of says it all. You like to think that, you know, that they feel that way, but when you get to see it, when you get to see what we saw in Between Me and My Mind, when you get to see it come together and see how important it is to them, how can you not just be in love with what they do and how they do it? I think that's what it comes down to, is that it is a mutual respect.
Yeah.
That we respect what they do, and they respect the fact that we've, you know, followed them around all these many years.
You know, in that article too, he said something that I've been saying for, I mean, even with the Grateful Dead, just perfectly imperfect is something that I think, being someone with tons of anxiety and like mind chatter and, you know, going for it and doing stand-up comedy and all that. It's like you need to give yourself a little bit of liberty and a little bit of permission to fail in life. And, you know, we don't all want to be, you know, the Nickelbacks of the world or the Foo Fighters where, you know, every time you go see them, it's that, you know, verbatim album, you know, song. And I'm right. doing, I'm here in Las Vegas right now. I'm doing two shows a night for 7 nights in a row. So I've got 14 shows where I'm doing two 20-minute sets to two different crowds. And I have to go up and spend the first minute or two kind of tuning and reading it a little bit and looking at the person in the front and maybe commenting and joking and making it like unique for myself. I think because it's built into my DNA because of this music and because of these guys. And to see, you know, Trey and hear them, you know, acknowledge that and look at each other and laugh and smile and go, whoops, I really did forget the every lyric of that song, you know, like when they butcher Fee and the band, and the crowd seems to love that more than when, if he nailed it. It's like, what an unbelievable safety net we've all built. You know what I mean?
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And I think that's really neat, the what you've recognized about your own performance style that you've sort of inherited from that. I think that's fantastic.
Well, and I appreciate that. And sometimes it's a bit of a lonely feeling in my like Away From Fish community. I mean, yeah, in my Away From Fish community, in my like professional world, because I don't want any moments to be the same. I find it very hard to, even when I did sales or dated or whatever, I wanted every moment, I expected every moment to be different and unique, and that's what made it fun. And even if it was going back to the same restaurant, and we'll make an analogy of it being, you know, one down with disease versus another down with disease, they're different. No two are the same. And I kind of expect right. that out of life. And I feel like that's almost kind of become like a double-edged butter knife, if you will, you know, right. it's like, it's not going to hurt me, but it's given me a little bit of like, I expect more from life because of what I experience with this band.
Sure. I mean, we certainly all expect it. It basically ruins other all other
everything
genres of music and performances that are cookie cutter no doubt.
Yeah,
it raises the bar.
I remember going to I think it was REM and Radiohead after seeing Fish, and the show was so short, and I was like, oh man, that's it. Like they're only doing one. And it was like, they did the album Monster start to finish. And I was like, that's great. And they did other, you know, even other concerts that you go see where it's like a one set and it's like, oh man, wow. Like we get two concerts for the price of one when we sure. go see Fish, you know? And it's, I find that like bringing someone, and I'd love your opinion on this. If you like bringing people to their first shows, I find it hard sometimes. I feel like it's like sitting someone down and having them watch episode 8 of season 6 of your favorite show and having to like pause it in between and be like, now this guy hasn't been around since the first season, but he, you know, came back and he's got a little more energy and he's, you know, now he's a villain. You know?
I love that analogy. I haven't had too many experiences, but I've had one fairly recently. We had an intern working for us from about January to very recently, and I we're based in Maryland, and Merriweather is our go-to hometown venue.
Oh, love it so much.
Yep. Yes, and so I offered this intern a ticket to the show, and he was kind of reluctant to take it. I mean, I expected, given that he'd been working for us for a few months and definitely had expressed interest in in the music, and even though he wasn't a Fish fan, certainly enough of a music fan to be intrigued and ask questions. And I kind of insisted. I said, you know, unless you got really something really, really awesome going on that night, you should really come and do this. And you're right. It's like I actually spent a lot of the show thinking to myself, what is he thinking about all this? And he at least told me he had a good time. I don't think he's the next, you know, person that's going to jump on tour. But it made me look at it with different eyes too. It's like, oh wow, you know, everybody just went crazy because they're reprising Cross-Eyed and Painless in the middle of this song. And
yes.
And I think, you know, I think that's might be a bit confusing to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, it's definitely confusing. And, I brought a first timer, to the second night of Mohegan. And, he's a guy who, you know, it's weird. He comes at it from pigeons playing ping pong and turquoise and jam music, but never Fish. So I was like, oh, that's easy. That's nice. That's almost kind of like bringing, you know, like a surfer snowboarding. And that was fun. And I just go, listen, I'm not going to, I go, write your questions down and afterwards we'll grab a beer and talk about it. But I don't really want to middle of anything, like begin to, but I still found myself kind of leaning in and I'm like, this is a new one. It's like from this thing Trey wrote about his friend who died and we'll talk about it later. And I just kind of, I feel this like mother hen ish thing. And, you know, I turned my little brother onto it and I brought him to his first show, Great Woods, when he was, in 2.0, I think when he was 14. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a, like, eye-opener to see his eyes so freaking wide open, you know, and it's nice and it's exciting. But I also kind of feel that, like, I don't really feel like dealing with a, you know, tour guiding you through this.
Right. I have to restrain myself sometimes to not be that guy that wants to tell everybody around me what they just, you know, what they just segued into or why this is significant. I try to bite my tongue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny you say that. Cause I remember night three Camden, there was a guy behind me talking the whole time, like double fisting. If he could have triple fisted beers, he would have been triple fisting beers, but he was just loud and chain smoking cigarettes. And they're in the middle of Tila, and it was a really good Tila. And they finally get to the part where they're singing the words Tila for the first time in the song, which is the end of the song.
Right.
And he goes, yo, they're fucking playing Tila. We got a Tila. And I'm like, we've had a Tila, dude. You're ruining it, you know? Like, but you got to kind of bite your lip and just look at your buddy and roll your eyes and be like, Jesus Christ, you know?
Yep.
It's very interesting. Is there anything? Are you a proponent or a fan of Couch Tour at this point in your life?
It's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a couple kids, mm-hmm. and you know, I think maybe similar to your feeling that you can't get to certain shows just because your career, demands that you take advantage of opportunities when they come up and they may fall on show dates. We have certain, you know, constraints on what we can see, based on family activities. And it's so great to be able to tune into a show right from our living room. And, we've even had our depending on whether it's an East Coast show or West Coast show, our kids will watch too. And
nice.
And they're into it. I love it. I'm a proponent.
Yeah. I think it's really amazing. Sometimes I miss the feeling of being at a show when I'm home watching Couch Tour. So what I'll do is I miss the aesthetics of the show. So what I'll do is I'll hide a bowl in my sneaker and I'll stand outside my front door for like 40 minutes.
That's hilarious.
I'll run to the local party city and get a tank and just hide it in the backyard. And after the show, I'll sell myself balloons.
That's great.
What do you see on the horizon for Fantasy Tour?
Well, we're working on a complete site redesign that should be completed in 2019, and if not, be released early in 2020. It's going to be the most significant change to the look and feel of the site and the functionality of the site. The most important thing about it is it's going to work a hell of a lot better on your cell phone. That's one of the things that we've wanted to address for a really long time, is that the site does not respond to your cell phone when you're in a browser on your device. So, but it's going to have a lot of new features, particularly in the stats area. And I think people will like the improvements to the message boards as well.
Awesome, man. Well, I look forward to it. And again, it's just great getting to chat with you, and I really appreciate it. And I hope that you enjoyed this.
Sounds good.
All right, brother. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
You too. Take care.
Later.
Adios, amigo.